You, and is this on? It is good to be with you this evening, and hopefully you won't fall asleep after that good meal, right? So, Trent said something about like 3 hours worth of time to talk. Does that sound about right? So, now, hey, we are glad to be with you, and just a little bit more background and the reason why we're here. I've had the opportunity to lead and start the Center County Orphan Care Alliance, where I was have been pastoring in the Center County area for, I don't know, 22 years, I guess we've been in the State College area. But when I was working with 12 other pastors in State College, we had been meeting weekly together, and we had been praying together, and those pastors started to say, hey, we need to do something more intentionally to serve our community together. And it was fertile soil for me to be able to ask them, what if we started an orphan care ministry together? And they all jumped on board with that right away. And I asked them if they'd be willing to find a representative from their church to start meeting with representatives from other churches in our community. And 8 of those 13 pastors were able to find somebody that was able to meet. And as we started getting together, it was like 3 or 4 months later, we officially became what was called the Center County Orphan Care Alliance. And at the time, I was on an elevator ride with one of the county directors through CYS, and I said to her, what can we do as a church to serve you here in the community? And she just kind of looked back at me and said, you guys are the church, you're going to do one event and we won't hear from you again. That was kind of an indictment on the church at the time. And so we were excited that 3 years later, they realized we weren't going away. We'd had the opportunity to become, through the local churches, the number one recruiter of foster and adoptive homes in Center County. And they started to say, can we come to your meetings? And we've had the blessing of having the agencies, a handful of reunification teams in the room with the church representatives for the past 13 years. And God has just been doing some really good, really good stuff. And so this last year, there's been a bunch of years I've been wrestling with, hey, do we go full-time orphan care? Well, this a year and a half ago, started to feel God's kind of release from my role as a pastor to start what is now the Pennsylvania Orphan Care Alliance. And I have a month and a half. At the beginning of the year, I'll officially be full-time doing orphan care. But I wanted to kind of give you that, just that foundation, a little bit of a background, so you know where we came from. And my introduction to Trent just came from an email. Somebody in one of our local agencies reached out to me and said, we have a biological mom that's moving to Sligo and wondered if you have any connections up there that you could help us help her. So I emailed a handful of pastors, and Trent was one of those pastors that responded to me. And he saw in my email signature that I was a pastor on staff at Calvary Church. And just so happens that our lead pastor, Trent says, is like one of his favorite people in the world. So his parents are sitting here, so you probably better say that first, but right? So I just loved the way God kind of makes those connections, and Trent and I started connecting and loved the fact that Clary and his, a bunch of churches now that are working together officially as the Orphan Care Alliance. So we're going to tell you a little bit about our family story, and this evening what we really want to do is just tell some stories that we hope will give you some tools, potentially, whether you're a parent, a grandparent, thinking about being a parent, or just part of the family of God. And we'll share one Bible story, but I'll let my wife introduce our family. There should be a picture, hopefully, that will pop up. But I always like to say this, don't we look good?
You should see us get out in the morning.
Yeah, you should see us at our house in the morning as we're trying to get out. We are an absolute mess. So,
All right. So we have 6 children. We call them the bigs and the littles. In the back row there in the middle, right above me, is our oldest daughter, Kara. She's 25. She lives in Buffalo, New York, and she works with refugees and teaching and helping. She always wanted to be a missionary. But she got into a program where she realized she didn't have to go away to be a missionary. They're all coming here. And so she works with them in New York. So, and our second daughter is the blonde right beside her. She's 24, and she's getting married in July. And she works with Vince on the Orphan Care Alliance. She does a lot of the administrative stuff. And then our third daughter is, she is going full-time online for school for her undergrad. And at the same time, she works full-time at the district court office. So her goal is to be a lawyer, a child advocacy lawyer. She doesn't want to be a foster parent. She doesn't want to be a social worker and have to do those things. She wants to be up there and can make changes. So her goal is to go to law school. She has one more year. And so then our three younger children, we adopted out of the foster care system. We were fostering. They're not the only children we fostered, but they're the only ones that did not go to a family or somewhere else. So the blonde that's right in front of Vince is Kaylin. She's 11. She's in fifth grade. Sixth grade. And then the little girl in the very front is Callie. And she is in fourth grade. She's 9. And then we have one little boy, and he is all boy, and he's 7. He's in second grade. So that's them.
Yeah. So that's our crew, and we call them our bigs and our littles, and we'll dive into a little bit of some of their stories in just a little bit. But I want to kind of lay the groundwork of some of the things we want to talk about this evening with a story from the Old Testament. But first of all, before I do that, you know, as your children are old enough to speak, what's one of the questions that we ask them? What was that? What do you want to be when you grow up, right? So there's this other popular question, right? Maybe you don't do it in Clary County, but how big are you?
How old are you?
How big are you, right? And what do kids respond by saying? So big, right? And they throw their arms up in the air and like stretch out just to get a little more stature. And why do we ask them that? Because we don't really want them to see themselves as small and weak. We want to see them as growing and getting stronger. And I know you guys have been in this series where you've been talking about the family for the last couple of weeks. And I want to read you a story from the Old Testament in 1 Samuel 14 that is going to introduce us to just a really bad dad. Like, the Bible is full of mentors, both good and bad, and we can learn from both of them. So I want to read this story in 1 Samuel chapter 14, starting with verse 1. So one day Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come on, let's go to where the Philistines have their outpost." But Jonathan did not tell his father what he was doing. Meanwhile, Saul and 600 men were camped on the outskirts of Gibeah around the pomegranate tree at Migron. No one realized that Jonathan had left the Israelite camp to reach the Philistine outpost. Jonathan had to go down between two rocky cliffs that were called Bozez and Senna. The cliff on the north was in front of Michmash, and the one on the south was in front of Geba. "Let's go across to the outpost of those pagans," Jonathan said to his armor bearer. "Perhaps the Lord will help us, for nothing can hinder the Lord. He can win a battle whether he has many warriors or only a few." "Do what you think is best," the armor bearer replied. "I'm with you completely, whatever you decide." "All right then," Jonathan told him. "We will cross over and let them see us. If they say to us, 'Stay where you are, or we'll kill you,' then we'll stop and not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come on up and fight,' then we'll go up. That will be the Lord's sign, and he will help us defeat them." When the Philistines saw them coming, they shouted, "Look, the Hebrews are crawling out of their holes." Then the men from the outpost shouted to Jonathan, "Come on up here, and we'll teach you a lesson." "Come on, climb up right behind me," Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "for the Lord will help us defeat them." So they climbed up using both hands and feet, and the Philistines fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer. And his armor bearer killed those who came behind them. They killed some 20 men in all, and their bodies were scattered over about half an acre. Suddenly, panic broke out in the Philistine army, both in the camp and in the field, including even the outpost and raiding parties. And just then an earthquake struck, and everyone was terrified. Then Saul and his men rushed out to the battle, and they found the Philistines killing each other. There was terrible confusion everywhere. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle continued to rage even beyond Beth Aven. I love this story for so many reasons. There's Jonathan, who's an incredible mentor, a guy that we can learn from. There's his dad, Saul, who's sitting under a tree doing nothing. He's kind of on this coasting plan. I like to say bad things happen to good people who just sit in neutral. Got lots of neutral stories I could tell you, but one of my favorites, my degree is actually in animal science. I'm a cowboy, not a pastor, just to be clear. But I was working in Seven Valleys, Pennsylvania, on a farm. So you can imagine lots of hills and valleys. My boss and I one day were moving about 60 cows. As we were moving the cows, a couple of them kind of got behind his truck. So he parks his pickup on top of this hill to get out and move the cows. And he thought he was okay. He didn't put the emergency brake on because it was sitting still when he got out. But when he turned around and looked back, his pickup was starting to roll down the hill. And I'm like a couple hundred yards away, can do nothing about it. But I see him start chasing his truck down the hill. And it was an incredibly funny scene. At the bottom of the hill, there was a ravine. Well, fortunately, there was like six strands of high tensile fence that he hit, that pickup hit before it went over the ravine and it took out a bunch of fence. But I love to tell that story because bad things happen to good people who just hang out in neutral. And that's what Saul's doing here. He's sitting under a pomegranate tree doing nothing. And his son Jonathan realizes that he can't tell his father where he's going because his father would try to talk him out of it. So Saul's kicking back with this cluster of grapes. He was afraid and he didn't have his eyes on the maker of the mountains. He had his eyes on the mountains. So again, he wasn't playing to win. He was just playing not to lose. So instead of fighting on the front lines, Saul's sitting on the sidelines. And this isn't an isolated incident for Saul. A couple chapters later, we have the story of David and Goliath, and here the Israelites are camped on one bank and the Philistines are on the other bank, and Goliath's coming out for 40 days and he's challenging somebody to fight him. David shows up on the scene, this little boy, and he says, "Who is this guy that's throwing threats at my God?" And David says, "I'll go fight him." Again, Saul tries to talk him out of it, says, "You're too small to be able to do that," but he lets him go. And the Bible tells us that Saul was head and shoulders taller than any other Israelite. There was one Israelite who was the size of a Goliath, potentially, that should have been out fighting him. But instead, Saul lets a little boy go fight his battles for him. He's hanging out in neutral. Saul was a do-nothing kind of guy. And Hebrews chapter 11 it tells us that faith is being sure of what we hope for. It's being sure of what we do not see. And when our eyes are fixed on Jesus, we see the mountain mover. We don't see the mountains. We start to see things the way that Jonathan saw things. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, it tells us this: without faith, it's impossible to please God. Those who come to God must believe that He exists, and they must believe that He rewards those who look to Him. And faith can only happen if we are action-oriented, if we are livers of life, not sitting on the sidelines. And Jonathan understood this. He was seeking God, and he believed that God existed, and he put his faith into action. And when we do the same thing, it pleases God. Again, Saul's sitting on the sidelines. Jonathan says to his armor bearer, "We're going to go ahead across this open field." The Philistines have the high ground. They go in the middle of the day. Again, he didn't tell his dad, because if he told his dad would try to talk him out of it. And Jonathan says to his armor bearer, or I'm sorry, his armor bearer says to him, "Whatever you want to do, I'm going to go with you. I'm all in." And I just want to say about this armor bearer that I love this guy. I'm with you no matter what. I know as a leader, there's been so many times where, just like Jonathan, I've got a really dumb plan. It's kind of a crazy idea. But there's people of faith that are saying, you know, I'm going to pray with you. I'm going to go with you regardless of what the cost might be. And when somebody steps out in faith like Jonathan, and an armor bearer goes with them, miracles start to happen. Armies start to fall away. And the thing that I love about Jonathan's plan is that it's such a bad plan. It's so bad. I think he's making it up as he's walking across the field. He's like, hey, if they say, come on up, then we're going to go up. I don't know about you, but if it's just me and my armor bearer and there's a bunch of these guys on the hill, I think I'm going to be saying, let's wait till it's dark and let's like go kill them in their tents if we can. Or if they start falling off the cliffs, then let's go up. But that's not what Jonathan does. He says, perhaps God will move on our behalf. So again, I just want to highlight the terribleness of this plan. It was the faith in God and believing who God was that showed up and saved a nation. It was one man's willingness to put his faith into action that saved a nation. So I really just wanted to share that story as a little bit of a backdrop to some of what Beth and I want to share the rest of the evening. There's one other verse that I wanted to read. And where'd it go? My printer printed things on front and back. I never print things on the front and back of paper. So here it is. James 2, verse 17. Said, in the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I'm going to show you my faith by my deeds. And you know, so many times God-given opportunities often come disguised as dead ends. They come looking like this deal that Jonathan was willing to face against the Philistine armies. He was proactive in starting towards that Philistine army and waiting on God's response. And maybe you've heard Jim Elliot's quote where he said, it's hard to steer a parked car. Get moving. God will move you along the way, but sitting under the pomegranate tree doesn't give God the opportunity to do anything. So with that story, I'm going to kind of move away from that. We're going to tell some of our stories. And as we were kind of thinking about this, we're thinking, well, we don't even know where to go with some of these things. But we're hopeful that telling you some of our family stories, some things that we felt like God told us to be proactive on over the years and the way we've seen God use those, we hope that they will be an encouragement to you. And for some of you, as parents facing raising your kids in a difficult culture, hopefully it'll give you a little courage to take the next step. And I love to say in this story with Jonathan, it was just taking the steps that mattered.
We had a great plan. It was really dumb.
Yeah.
And God had a greater plan. So this is the story.
Totally. So tiptoe if you must, but take the steps of faith. I'll let you get started with Zambia story.
Well, Vince kind of felt like he was maybe in a season a little bit of not sitting back on the sidelines, and he really started to pray that God would open up his territory.
Can I interrupt you already?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to give you, I was pastoring, we had just started pastoring as the lead pastor at a church that was 50 years old, and the church had sent money for missions, but were absolutely sitting on the sidelines. Nobody had ever been involved in missions. So that's where this kind of feeling like we needed to go do something to lead that church into being more action-oriented.
So after this prayer, he gets this invitation to go to Zambia. And in the invitation to go to Zambia, he said, I will go if my wife goes. So he came home to tell me this. Well, let me tell you, my answer was no. N-O, I'm not going. And I had lots of good reasons why I should not go. Our children were younger then. They needed me. What happens if something happened to both of us? Who's going to watch our kids? I had really, really good reasons why I was not going. And so he had just kind of resigned himself that we weren't going to go. But one night, and I don't remember if I was, I don't know, but God whispered to me, and it was, all of your reasons, Beth, of why you don't want to go is because you're afraid. Every reason I had was because I was afraid. And I'm not a fear. This isn't from me. And so that morning I had told Vince, I said, well, I'll go. And he said, what? And I said, well, God is not a God of, he does not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power and love and of self-discipline. And the reasons why I did not want to go was because of fear, and it's not from God, so I will go. And so that decision changed our world.
It did. Yeah, and it was, as Beth was reading her Bible and God kind of spoke to her that verse, I had to let our friends know the next day if we were going to be going to Zambia with them or not. So when I woke up and she said she was going, I was absolutely shocked because of her adamant no's leading up to that.
So when we went over there, I was standing in another, you know, another continent, and I saw the world in a whole new light. This wasn't a face on a television. This was the hungry, the fatherless, the brokenness. It was my world. I thought, do people not know? Do people have any idea what all of this is? Everybody should see what I'm seeing right now. And it for sure changed my life, because once I saw, I couldn't not see anymore. So
yeah. So part of the reason I wanted to tell that story is because one act of obedience and listening to God, and again, it would have been really easy to look at all the reasons why not to go. But God used that story. At the time, the HIV/AIDS pandemic was huge. In the country of Zambia, 10% of the population was orphaned by HIV and AIDS. So we had a front row seat. We met a whole bunch of orphans while we were there and felt like we would have probably brought a few children home if we could have at the time. But what it allowed us to do was to come back and begin to tell the story to our congregation in State College. And through a day camp that summer, 40 children raised $800 that we sent to our friend in Zambia, who used that money to sponsor 3 children at an existing orphan school. A couple weeks later, he sent me profile pictures of 15 children who are not going to school, who are not eating meals every day, some of them living on the streets. And that small little congregation that I was pastoring in State College, as we shared those profiles with them, began to sponsor those children. After those 15 were sponsored, he sent me another 15. And before we knew it, those 15 were sponsored, and he sent me more. Our small congregation was then sponsoring 46 children. And he emailed back and he said, hey Vince, I'm gonna start a school called State College Christian Church School for the Orphans. We thought, well, that's flattering, but doesn't sound like a great name for a school in in Africa. So why don't you rename the school? And so he and the children renamed that school and called it Haven of Hope. And so I always love to just kind of look back of, again, you have to remember, I'm a cowboy. The way God called me into ministry wasn't through like seminary. I sit in rooms with pastors and feel very inadequate. But it was that perhaps if we take a step, God will do something. It was Beth's willingness to say, you know what, I heard from God, and I'm going to step out even though I'm absolutely afraid of what it might look like over there. Her biggest fear really is the food she might have to eat. So,
yes.
You know, different food.
But the long story is today there are 2 schools in Zambia, 1 school in Uganda. I don't even know how many kids. I know that
350 children.
350 children's lives have been changed. And some of the kids that first joined the program, we were there, she graduated, and she's a nurse now, and her sponsor was a nurse. And so she wanted to become a nurse someday. So she just graduated from nursing school and is a nurse. So cool story of how all of that became. But anyway.
And I'll keep going on that story a little bit more. The and the fun thing was, in the next couple of years, 30% of that congregation went on a mission trip to Zambia, met their sponsored children, fell in love with them, and God just started to do so many things in rewriting stories. And again, one act of obedience begins to change the trajectory of not only a family, but of a church and of a community. So we love to tell that story. And then...
And meanwhile, I was teaching first grade at a Christian school, and my eyes were opened again in that I had one little boy in my classroom who hated Fridays. He hated Fridays. And we all, who does not love Friday? I mean, really, it's Friday. And he didn't like Fridays because he didn't know where he was going to be for the weekend. He didn't know where he was going to be farmed off to, who was going to take care of him, what was going to happen to him. And then when he came back to school on Monday, it was really heart-wrenching to hear what this boy endured for his weekend. So that is when my eyes were open to, there are children right here in front of me locally that need love and need a safe place and need action. And so that's where we began. So I went home and had told Vince, and he has always, from the time we dated, has always had a heart for vulnerable children and children in hard places. We would be in Inner Harbor, and we're driving through the city, and he's like in tears, like, look at these kids on these front steps. It's 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and they have nowhere to go and no hope. And I'm like, are the doors locked? Like, we're driving through these neighborhoods. And so anyway, he's always had that. So I told him, he was way ready. So I remember clearly sitting down at the dinner table with our three children. I think our oldest was in fifth grade at the time, and said, this is what I felt the Lord was putting on my heart, that, to do foster care. And so they were like, okay, we can do this, not knowing any idea what we were going to do. Mm-hmm. But that was the beginning of that.
Yeah, so that foster care journey began for us when our children were 13, 12, and 8 at the time, and that was 13 years ago. Since then, we've had 23 children placed in our home, some of them for short periods of time, some for them for a year, year and a half, and we were able to see reunification in three of them, obviously, that did not go home. And when we started to foster, they called and asked if we would be willing to take an infant. We were not signed up to take infants. We were way past that stage. But there was no other foster families in our county home that weekend where they needed this placement. So we said yes, we would take that baby when she was born. And we showed up at the hospital and picked up what is now our 11-year-old.
You skipped part of the story.
Fill it in.
Yes.
I think.
Yes. Okay. So we did have some of our first placement was the two little kids that came with Mountain Dew in their bottles. And they came with Mountain Dew in their bottles with a laundry basket of clothes, of infant clothes that did not fit them. And we had friends at the church come. And this is where not every family is called to be a foster family, but everybody can do something. And we're so thankful that we were plugged in to a church that helped make our yeses doable. So every time we said yes, we knew that we had people behind us to help us. We had friends that went to the grocery store and bought us diapers, and they got everything that we needed. We didn't have toys and clothes, and all of a sudden we had everything we wanted. And it was the beginning of us learning. The church can out-resource the government so much faster. And so it was just an open... So that was our first placement. And we had a couple other kids. But one of the things that I want for sure to go back to is that moment when I was standing in Africa and I wanted, I thought the rest of the world should see this, because these are people that God cares about. This is God's heart. He cares about these people. And I wanted my children to know that. I wanted them to see what God cares about. So we were able to take our whole family on a missions trip. So our kids got to meet their sponsored children. They weren't just on the refrigerator, but our kids actually got to see the things that matter to God, which all of these people. And so we were so thankful. And it was another yes to their hearts. It was another step for them to see a world greater than themselves. And so when we came back, it was a week later, that's when we got our phone call for this baby. And our kids were absolutely full on, yes, we know what we're doing now. And that's when we got our little girl that we ended up taking her. And it's a blonde-haired little blue-eyed girl. We're like, how did we get this girl? Our youngest was 10. She was 10 when we got this little baby. And again, the church family came right around us, helped us get what we needed. And so then that began.
Yeah. So one of the things that we wanted to lean into is just to I think Trent's probably been talking here at least about the importance of the spiritual family. And throughout this journey, we could not have done what we were doing in foster care without the support of the church family. Nationally, 90% of foster families quit before the 2-year mark. So many foster children are bouncing from 4 to 15 different homes. What we've learned that if a foster family has wraparound support, 90% of them will still be doing it beyond the 2-year mark. And as at the Orphan Care Alliance, we've said, hey, we've got to be emphasizing that point big time. I know there's some foster families in this room, and maybe you've been close to them. Not everybody can foster or adopt, but you can support those who do. God's clear command in James 1:27 is that real religion is to look after orphans and widows. It's to care for the vulnerable children. And the church family is needed in order for foster families and adoptive families to be able to succeed in this journey, not just succeed, but to be able to thrive. It's such an important part of that. And that's one of those things that we've learned more and more. We're so thankful for our church family and the way that they've supported us along the way.
The armor bearers that were behind us.
The armor bearers, absolutely. We'll switch gears just a little bit. A few years ago, Beth had a younger mom that she was spending some time with, and this mom came up to Beth one day and she said, I have a question for you. She said, referring to our family, she said, it looks like your family is so close. How did that happen? Like, what did you do? And at the time, let's just be clear. Like, we look at each other sometimes like, what are we doing? We're doing things terribly wrong. So
we're here tonight and we're still looking at each other going, what are we doing?
Yeah. we're giving you some of our highlight reels here tonight. But we do. We have a close, our adult daughters still come home all the time. They love their siblings. In this process, after we adopted our now 11-year-old, they had a meeting together.
Our adult children.
And they said, they came back to us and they said, you guys have to adopt more. I'm like, good for you. Glad you think so. But what they said is we don't want Kaylin to grow up without siblings because we loved having each other growing up.
We want that for Kaylin.
And so they were advocates for us adopting more, and tonight they're home putting them to bed. So they own that and are a part of doing this journey with us. But anyway, Beth's response to this lady is, hey, what are a few things that would allow your family to be close?
So, yeah, she always says, your family is so close. How did that be? And I thought about it for a second, and I said two things, foster care and vacation. I said, foster care because we're working towards something together. It's a sacrifice for all of us, and we could not do it without each other. And we know we've had heartbreak together, and we've had to work together, all hands on deck when we're doing it. And so it's made us closer. We're working towards something. We're mission. What do you say that? How do you say that?
On mission.
We're on mission, yeah. He says. Yeah. And the second one was vacation. We've learned to laugh together. So we've had to go away. And at first our kids were like, oh, balking. And we didn't want to miss their friends and all of this other stuff. But we're like, no, we're all going. And so it took them a couple days. But it was able to reconnect ourselves, check in with each other, disconnect from technology and all of that. And just being able to enjoy God's creation and explore. One of the things that we did for our family, Vince and I wanted to get the kids to 48 states before they graduated from high school. So our adult children, we did do that successfully. I think our other three kids are at 32 states, I think, something. So we laugh and explore together. So that was my answer to her. I said, foster care and vacation, yeah. Two really important things.
Yeah. And the foster care piece, just because, again, our experience and as pastors the last 25 years and being able to watch families that are on mission together for kingdom stuff, it's a game changer. When we're living beyond ourselves, the families that we watch do that are thriving together. So if you're leading a family right now, encourage you to think about what does that look like? If you aren't already on mission together, what does it look like to be on mission? And again, that goes for the spiritual family. As soon as we at the church that we were pastoring started to get on mission for Haven of Hope Zambia, it changed the whole feel of that church because we were working towards something together. But those vacations were a must for us. They were one of those things that we said we're going to invest in. It's going to cost us something, but it's on the calendar every single year. And as Beth said, those teenagers were like, we're getting ready to do a 3-week trip across the country. Like, we don't want to leave our friends. You know, a little hip action, a little head action. But we're like, we're going. But
those are the things they talk about today.
Those are the memories they share the most. I want to read this list. We asked our children yesterday. We said we're going to go talk a little bit about family and parenting. And we said, what are some of the best things that we've done as parents? We had no idea what to expect. Our 21-year-old said this. She said, making me pay for my own phone. So at 13, she got a phone. All three of our teenagers got them at that time.
We're so sorry. We're so sorry to that young man out there.
Right. He does. Awesome. Good man. So our 21-year-old, that's what she said, because at 13, 14, she was like, you guys are so mean. All my friends' parents pay for their phones. And we're like, okay, that's great. If you want a phone, you're paying for it. But she has watched in the last couple of years some of those friends that have just kind of been given things and not been given the responsibility. So for her, in her mind, it's beyond just the phone, but it's the teaching of responsibility, and it's holding your ground and being okay to be a parent that doesn't do what every other parent is doing. Our 11-year-old, she said, protecting me from technology. Again, it was we're like kind of shocked to hear some of their answers because we get pushback from our 11-year-old. But she said, one of the best things you do is protect me from technology. We limit our time. We make sure it's in a space where we're a part of what's going on with that. One of our 21-year-old, again, she said, you started putting money in our 529 account for college. Actually, all three of our adult children said money was was one of those areas that we did right, because when they were, you know, small enough to get their first dollar, that's when we started to talk about what it meant to tithe and what it meant to save and be able to invest in their future and budget. And again, we're not saying this to pat ourselves on the back, but it's one of those that the principles of God, when they're applied, they work. And when we started teaching the principles of God to our kids when they're 3 and 4 years old and they grew up with them, it's been so fun to watch how God's allowed them to have financial freedom. Our third one is almost through college. All three of them are debt-free. No college bills, no car bills, no nothing.
And we don't make a lot of money.
Right. We don't make much money as pastor and wife. But they have the freedom to be able to serve God and the flexibility to do what they want. So we were encouraged to hear all three of them say, and you know, we work with marriages, read recently that 75% of marriage or divorces are blamed on financial issues. Hey, parents, if you can get this part right and teach our kids biblical principles on how to handle their money, God wants to do some stuff with that.
And it started out when they were little. I mean, very, very little. They knew that if I didn't have a coupon or it wasn't on sale, then we're not putting it in the grocery cart. So they knew that from the time they were little. And we, and one of our goals as a family, and again, some of the choices we made were really intentional. The path was wide, windy and curvy and not what our plan was. It was, like I said, it was a terrible plan. But there were some things that we're really intentional about. And one of them is we wanted our kids to have 4-H. And so we've lived on a farmette, and so our kids always raised animals. So the one had chickens, and so she sold her eggs. And so she learned through her eggs where the first part, in fact, it just happened with our little boy because he took over the chicken business and the egg business. And someone paid him for his first dozen of eggs. He took the money, and he ran to his room because he thought, we're like, oh, no, 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 bring that back. Mm-hmm. And so we had to teach him that we collect it in a jar, and then once a month, Vince sits down with him and he gives, they count it up and they give the first percent, they tithe it. And then the next part goes to savings towards your college or to your continuing education. And then the next part is your spending. So we've done that from the very beginning with the kids. And each of them had some way that they earned money, but we taught them from the very beginning. And our adult daughter, that was one of her things she said is tithing. She said, I didn't know, Mom, that people don't tithe. She says, I didn't know that you didn't do that because I've always done that. That's what you do. And so that was one of her things to say.
Yeah. I'll read through the rest of us really quick here. One of them said, teach me not to lie. Make us get back on the horse, literally and figuratively. Spending time with me doing what I was interested in, whether biking or running. Teaching us responsibility. To love your siblings and get it worked out. We always taught them to be the champion for your siblings because friends may come and go, but your siblings will always be there. If they had arguments, we don't listen to them long. We send them to the room and tell them to work it out and come back when they're done. And they appreciated that. Don't give up. Our son said he loves that we protect his chickens from the dog. The last one I'll read is that they taught us to be thankful for what we have.
I have a real quick story, about responsibility and work ethic. Our older kids are known for that. They work really hard. Like I said, two of our daughters worked full-time and were full-time college students. So they work really, really hard. But I was out in the garden this summer, and Vince was going away, and I was in the garden weeding, and my three older kids... they were going somewhere, and they came out, and they're like, what are you doing? And I said, oh, Dad didn't get this all garden weeded. I'm trying to get the weeding done. And they're like, where are the kids? And I said, I don't know. They're like, Dad would totally have us all in here doing this. I said, oh, you're right. And so I went and called in all the younger kids, and my older kids were like, this is what made us. We had to weed three rows every single day. And they went on and they said, and don't complain because your rows are so much smaller than our rows ever were. But it was funny to hear, like, it was a reminder even from my older kids, like, Mom, what are you doing? They need to be in here doing this. And so they look back now and say, oh, we had no idea, but it taught us a lot. So,
yeah. So as I was listening to them yesterday as we asked that question, it honestly helped me just renew my commitment to do the things that it's been so easy to start slacking on. So often, as parents, as church leaders, it gets easy to kind of just be like, you know, this is hard work. I just don't know if it's worth it. And we get tired and we get weary. But hearing them kind of refresh our memories last night was just a great experience to say, you know what, we need to be willing to have the courage as parents to live with biblical principles, to get our kids in God's word on a daily basis, to be able to teach them truth, even though it may not be popular in their culture. Kind of going back to that story of Saul and Jonathan. We need to make the Bible action, not just a story. We need to be doers of the word and not just hearers. Faith is an action. We need to live what it is we say that we believe. And you may not be living intentionally this evening. And we just want to challenge that. Whether it's with your, if you have a family, if you have children, whether if you don't have an intentional plan or a direction or you're not on mission with your kids, don't waste another day making some plans. You may not know where to start. You may not know what a good plan is, but I've talked to enough of you in the room this evening to know that there's some crazy Jonathans in this room that have a plan, and it might be a bad plan. If you don't have a plan, go latch on to one of their plans. I know your pastor has some plans and folks that are getting involved with the Orphan Care Alliance, and I'm sure there's other ministries. But take a step. Again, tiptoe if you must, but put your faith into action. So the final point is just this. If you don't do anything, nothing will happen. Everybody knows that. But most people live like they don't. So how big is your God? I hope that you can answer it like Jonathan did. That he's a God that perhaps will show up if you're willing to take the steps in his direction. And he'll defeat an army, he'll send an earthquake, and he'll show you miracles. And that's our hope for you, for this church family. Anything we want to add before I pray? All right. Let's pray. God, I just want to say thanks for this group of people that are here tonight. They're not here by accident. They're here because they've made an intentional decision to be followers of you. And God, I pray that if there's anybody in the room tonight that was maybe even struggling with being weary and finding it hard to take the next step of faith, that you'll just encourage them this evening to get up and to take that step of faith. God, if there's some folks that have been living, have been coasting like Saul sitting under a pomegranate tree, would you please just give them a Holy Spirit kick in the pants tonight to not be able to sit another day without having an intentional plan of taking some steps of faith? God, thank you for what you're doing through this congregation in Clarion and Petroleum Valley and Brookville. And God, we pray that in the days ahead, you will continue to use these believers to write a story of a great big God. And we look forward to being able to share those stories together. Thank you for your love for us, and thank you for the time to be together. In Jesus' name, amen.
I had one other thought while you were praying. Just a step for something that to start. I just think the timing of this is so wonderful as we're heading into the holidays and you're going to start the new year. One of the things that we do at the end of the year is we reflect on the end of the year and we think about what are our goals? What do we want to accomplish for the next year? It's a lot of life mapping, really. And it's not a New Year's resolution. It's, no, what are the action steps that we're going to step in to have different people around our table? How are we going to love our neighbors? How are we going to do this? It's we make goals of what we want to do. And it's actually fun. We've done it the last couple of years with our younger children that he actually pulls he saves them, and we pull them out at the end of the end of the year, and we're like, how did we do? Where did we do this? So it's just a good step as we're heading into the holidays to really sit down around the table with your family and be like, what should we think about doing together that we can work together to really have our faith in action? So just a last thought.